welcome to Halloween H4O, Talk Film Society's little retrospective on all the Halloween films, including the new one from 2018, 40 years after the original. And joining me today, as always, is my ever constant, ever one-track mind to kill me to, you know, because I'm his, like, goddaughter, niece, Zach Moore.
Yes, I've been asleep the past year, but I'm thinking when I wake up, I'm going to kill this nice old man who's been taking care of me for no reason. So that's my plan. It's my next plan, Brandon.
Yeah, so before we jump into the trivia here, I just wanted to point out something here that, you know, when we did our episode on Halloween 2, I had mentioned, I'm like, I don't know of any other horror movies or any other movies where the sequel takes place like immediately after the first one. And this one kind of does, because we get that little teaser sequence, which occurs directly after Halloween 4. So that was the first thing that that made my ears perk up when I was watching this here. So anywho, so yeah, this one is the, what is this one? The what of Michael Myers? The Revenge of Michael Myers here.
The fill in the blank of Michael Myers, yes.
The blank of Michael Myers part 5. So, excellent. Well, Zach, why don't you take it away? Why don't you cover our little bit of trivia that we have on Halloween 5?
Well, you mentioned the title of the film, The Revenge of Michael Myers. Interestingly enough, even though it was on posters and advertisements and trailers, that subtitle, The Revenge of Michael Myers, does not appear in the actual film. It just
That's
says
right.
Halloween 5
yes.
off the start. So, there's a little bit of trivia for you. And So Donald Pleasance, right? He had some disagreements about the creative direction of this film. He thought that Jamie should have been all evil after the fourth film, which is what I think most people maybe expected, because Michael Myers had apparently died and Jamie was set up to be the next killer, and he thought that. But Mustafa Akkad, the executive producer of all these films, he disagreed, and he thought that fans wanted to see the shape. They wanted to see Michael Myers, and so that's what they pushed through. And we got more Michael Myers, right? So speaking of Donald Pleasance as well, he filmed for about 2 weeks on the film, and then after he was done, he had the biggest trailer on the set. And then when he left, he made sure that they kept the trailer there, and they gave it to Daniel Harris, because he said, "You're the star now. This is your trailer." And she had been in a smaller trailer, and her mother had been complaining about the small size of her trailer. So so he was happy to pass that on to her, and that's something that really stuck with her.
We have a new
Michael Myers this time. We have Don Shanks, and he wore a different mask than George P. Wilbur, which I'm sure we'll talk about the mask some when we get into talking about it.
Yes, we will.
But the plan was, he was supposed to wear the same mask from Halloween 4 to maintain the continuity between the films. Because we literally have, you know, we have scenes that took place immediately after Halloween 4, and the mask, they do an okay job of hiding that it's not the same mask, but if you know what's coming, you can see that it's a different mask. But the mask did not fit Shanks, so a new one was made.
Oh.
So apparently without any regard for how the last one looked, but anyway, that's the reason why there's a different mask. Mustafa Akkad, he also was said about the film that he regretted that they killed off the character of Rachel. And in retrospect, he wished they had kept her alive. And I think most fans would agree with that. She was one of the most, she survived four for one.
Right,
but also
right.
She, you know, probably one of the most popular characters after four. And we can get into that about her quick end. We do revisit the Myers house in this film, but it's not the Myers house from the original. And they were unable to find a small Victorian house like the original, so they decided to choose a bigger, more mansion-like house, because it had, you know, bigger rooms, hallways, attics, basements, and that laundry chute, which plays such a great role in this film. So that again, continuity was not on there. Obviously on their priority list here, because there's no visual continuity doing this in the previous films. And then finally, Halloween 5 is the lowest grossing film of the entire franchise.
Okay.
That is adjusted for inflation and not adjusted for inflation. Any way you cut it, out of all the films, out of all 10 movies, it had the lowest gross of all of them. which is surprising because I thought four people seem to be generally positive towards four. It seemed to be return to form. You think people would say, oh, another one. Good. I liked the last one. But, you know, that's just very odd to me that five would be the lowest of them all.
I predict that that trend will continue with the next one.
No, it will not.
No, because you don't.
This is not up to this point. This is total. Like, out of all 10 films, Halloween 5 is...
No, that's what I mean. I with the new one coming out, with, you know, the 2018 film, I predict that this will still be the lowest, is what I mean.
Oh, I'm sorry. I see what you mean. Yes. Oh, yeah. I don't think... I think Halloween H4O will make more money in its opening weekend than Halloween 5 did in its entire run.
How much did it make?
How much do you think it made?
Well, I don't even know. I would... Let's say $200,000. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're giving me some low number here.
$11 million.
Okay, well, I don't know.
Adjusted for inflation, that's $27 million. You're Canadian. I know. You deal in different currency. I'll forget.
Yeah, $27 million American? Like, that could get our national debt gone. Like, that's the conversion. We just got back from Las Vegas, and I had 650 Canadian, and that got me, like, a hamburger. It's like yen or something like that is what it feels like. No, it was 400 American is what I converted to, though. But still, like, that's quite the – that's a third chopped off the top there. And I know I work harder than you for my dollars. There's Mr. Zach Moore.
Well, I'm not going to speak to that. But, you know, speaking of economics and Reaganomics, if you will, my one last bit of trivia here is the scene where, well, the couple scenes where Michael's wearing not his own mask. He's wearing that other Halloween mask that he's given. That was originally supposed to be a Ronald Reagan mask. However, it was rejected ultimately because they didn't want to get too political.
Okay.
So they made it just a generic goofy mask. I don't know what that is about president masks being popular. My dad had a Reagan mask, or not a Reagan, sorry. My dad had a Nixon mask he used to wear. It's just it's like Halloween and stuff, and I guess sometime in the 70s it became trendy to wear caricaturized masks of U.S. presidents. So anyway, that continues to this day. I've seen plenty of Trump masks around. So anyway, there you have it.
I don't think we've had much here. So in Canada for like masks of our prime ministers or something like that, I don't think so. Okay, Halloween 5. Let's jump into this steaming pile of Halloween-ness. And we'll talk about this film. This was weird. Like, Zach, I do not remember this movie at all. I haven't seen this in quite a while, and I did not remember a thing. The only thing that I remembered was that the opening was like a direct sequel. I actually, once I watched Halloween 4, I'm like, oh, that's right. This is how Halloween 5 starts as well. So that was the only thing that I really remembered about this movie at all. And I think it's really, really weird, this path that they've taken with this sequel, you know, with this weird psychic connection that she has with Michael Myers, Jamie, right? Is the girl?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis, yes.
No, not Jamie. Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lloyd.
has with Michael Myers. Like, this is so bizarre. And I don't know what to think about it. I don't think I really like it.
Yeah, it's, they could have gone a lot of ways after Halloween 4. You know, as we mentioned, you know, Donald Pleasance, for one, thought that, that Jamie should have been the next shape, if you will. And they decided not to go that way. You know, there was a fear, right, especially after Halloween 3, that, like, we got to keep Michael Myers in these things. You know, we got to see that mask. We got to see this the walking around doing what we expect him to do. If we start changing things up, people might not come. Ironically, this is they did it. They did went the quote-unquote safe route, bringing back Michael Myers, and they made the least amount of money out of any of these 10 films. And it is disappointing because that's such an incredible, like, shocking end to Halloween 4. And then you get to Halloween 5, and it's like, we pick up the night it happened, right? And then we follow Michael and his little deal, and, like, he escapes. But then we completely just kind of brush over the fact that Jamie, you know, stabbed her mom or her adoptive mother. I mean, yes, she wakes up, and now she's in this, you know, school hospital thing for children, and they're monitoring her brain waves, and she's mute now, and she's having nightmares, and it's referenced throughout the film, like, Donald Pleasance and Loomis, he tells her, he made you stab your adoptive mother, don't you remember? It's like, well, did he make you do that? Like, is that what we're saying? Like, they don't really... they just kind of brush over, like, okay, well, yeah, she had a tough night, you know. We'll let that go. I mean, and as we were talking about the kill count, right, and last time, we're like, did she kill her adoptive mom? It certainly looked that way, right? But they go out of the way to mention, do you want us to call your mother? Like, she's not, she's not dead. So they've retconned everything, and they've added this psychic thing, and it's such a weird, it felt really out of place in this universe up to this point.
Yeah, and they've added this thing, like there's weird things in this where they've added this tattoo on him with this, and I know that this gets paid off in the next movie. I know that it does, but they've added this weird tattoo on his arm.
The thorn.
What is it?
The thorn, as we learned.
The thorn. Is that what they call it in the next one?
Yeah.
Okay, so they've got this. They've added this weird shadow character with the cowboy boots and the steel toes on his boots and whatnot. And that's not really that guy's not paid off in this film at all. Like, we don't understand anything about this character. And this psychic connection that Jamie has with Michael Myers is just accepted by everybody, literally, without question. Where, you know, she's like calling out that boy's name and they're like, he's at the hospital, he's at the children's hospital. And like, all the cops leave to go to this hospital because the psychic little girl told them to. And this is like, there's nothing, there's no through thread. Like, I got no impression that this ability happened to her in the last movie, except for that little vision that she had when she put on the Halloween costume.
And saw the young Michael Myers in the mirror, right?
Right, but again, I don't, because she had the photos of him, I didn't assume that that was like some kind of psychic connection in the last one.
That was clearly not the intention when they made Halloween 4. I mean, this is retroactive stuff, and it's not even consistent in the movie, right? Because sometimes it's like the force, sometimes like, oh, I can feel where he is, right? Or sense his presence deal. But then it's like pantomiming. As he reaches to put on his mask, she reaches and put on a mask. It's like they're pantomiming each other, and that makes no sense to me.
Right. And it's like, I don't know. Like, how do you take that she's just there? Or maybe they're just trying to enunciate the fact that he's controlling her movements?
I think, again, that's them trying to massage the fact that she stabbed her adoptive mother. And they're trying to say, like, oh, somehow he can make her do things subconsciously or consciously. But at the same time, he was, like, you know, incapacitated when that happened, right? He's floating down a river. Which, by the way, just to take it one step back, when they had the recap, first of all, lamest opening credits of the whole franchise. Because you hear, and you're like, oh, they're chopping up pumpkins, but it's just this boring red text on a black screen when all the opening credit sequences up to this point have been inventive and very, they set the tone and the ambiance very well. This one, not so much, right?
But 4, I think, was my favorite, and then 3.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but like, because 3, I like that digital, but 4 was cool with all the shots. The
Halloween imagery. Yeah, absolutely. And then the pumpkin stuff is pretty iconic from the first two. So this one is just kind of blah, right? But anyway, so we get all that, and then when Michael Myers, right, when he crawls away from the hole he falls in, he's floating down the river, and they play the Halloween theme. And I can think this, I've never seen a more less intimidating scene of this, of like inappropriate use of the Halloween theme, and him just floating down the river. It's like da 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 da. He's just floating down the river. It's so lame. But yeah. So he's incapacitated. They kind of pull a Bride of Frankenstein. I don't know if you've seen the original Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah, yeah.
But when he finds the blind old man and he takes care of him for a year and teaches him like smoke and talk and all that stuff, that's actually in the original Mary Shelley novel as well. But they kind of squander it because Michael, he just kind of stumbles in and tries to kill the guy, but he's too weak and passes out. And then I guess he just lays there for a year?
A year.
Right?
And then suddenly strong enough, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, and then he immediately kills the guy, which is sad. But that coincides with like and we get this title, right? Halloween Eve. Or it's like, is that's October 30th?
Yeah.
It's like, so that he's on some internal clock. That's when he wakes up. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a thing called All Hallows Eve, but All Hallows Eve is actually Halloween.
Right.
Right? So, yeah.
Well, they're trying to sound cool, like, it's the night before Halloween. All you had to do was say October 30th. We understand. Right? But Halloween Eve, ooh. But that triggers him, and that's what triggers, it's like, Jamie was having these nightmares, to tie it all together, I'm trying to say here. Jamie was having these nightmares and stuff, sure, because she's in a traumatic experience, and she can't talk. I mean, fine, I can buy that, because she's a young child, all this crazy stuff just happened to her. I can run with that. But then, like, when did this psychic connection start? Is this the night it started when he woke back up? I don't know. That's what I'm going to go with based off what the movie presented us with.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's dormant for 364 days or whatever it is, 365 days, because, you know, and then all of a sudden on... Because, I don't know, like, was that the day before Halloween, or, like, what was that, right? So, All Hallows, Eve, right? But, yeah, so who knows how many days later it was. But, yeah, that's when everything started again. He was dormant, nothing happened for that long. And then all of a sudden she has this connection. Maybe he was in a coma for a year. But, again,
well, I guess. Why did that guy just leave him there then, right, for a year? I mean, they could have done something more, and it would have been a ripoff of Frankenstein. But it would have added some, I don't know, humanity to Michael Myers, which they don't want to do, but they also try to do in this movie, and I just don't get it. I just don't get their angle with that.
Yeah. Now, we do need to talk about the mask. Before we get to the mask, I want to talk about the little threads that they've tried to do something with this guy in the black outfit with the
man in black,
and whatnot,
yeah.
The man in black, and his tattoo and Michael Myers' tattoo. And I don't know if you noticed, but like this symbol was on the walls in the Myers house and stuff. Like there's a clear shot where Loomis is there, and behind him on the wall is this symbol.
You can also see it in the attic as well.
Yeah, you see it in the attic. And, like, there's a couple spots here and there where you just see this symbol. Okay, without going to Halloween 6, do you think that they were setting this up as something that they wanted to pay off later? Or do you think this was something they wrote that just didn't work? And, like, watching this on its own, what the hell is going on?
I think they clearly thought they were going to do something with it. I think... I obviously had no idea what they were going to do with it, or you would have gotten something more concrete in this movie. Because clearly, you see, Michael Myers has it's more of a scar than a tattoo, from what I saw. But we'll see it more closely in the next film, right? But Myers has it, the man in black has it. You see it on a wall. You see it here. You see it there. So clearly, there was forethought put into this. But I think they want to put that in there. And then we'll deal with it next time, right? It's kind of like Force Awakens, right? Star Wars. Like, we're going to have all these unanswered questions, and they'll deal with that in the next movie. And that's pretty much what they did, which makes this kind of incomplete, because you're like, what is the only purpose? You take the Man in Black out of this movie, nothing changes except Michael doesn't escape at the end, which I think would have been a more powerful ending, because, you know, he's sitting in the jail cell, which, by the way, looks ridiculous. Michael
with
Myers
his mask,
mask
on. Like, they're just going to leave this prisoner in jail with his mask on. Like, what kind of cops? These cops deserve to die.
Well, it's the same logic as, like, the Joker in The Dark Knight. I mean, just wash his makeup off, man. Like, you're not going to keep a guy captive like that. But then it is a rather chilling final line when
that's
they,
a good
they
movie,
take,
though.
That is a good movie, so you forgive it, right? But this one's not a good movie, so you don't forgive it, right? But it is a chilling line when they take Jamie up to the jail cell. And like, oh, they're going to take him to a maximum security prison where he'll stay there until the day he dies. And she says, he'll never die. Yeah. And that would have been a really creepy ending. But instead, we got this Dick Tracy-looking silhouette guy with a Tommy gun blowing up the police station, and he escapes. So I mean, but he serves no purpose in this movie other than just walking around, being a presence, being like, hey, we're going to get to this next time. And it's very unfulfilling, and it makes it an incomplete story this time.
Right. And then now watching these movies like we have, I mean, like, this is two Halloweens in a row that the entire police force has been shot up in the same building. Right? Because that happened in Halloween 4 as well. Right? Like, maybe they weren't shot up in Halloween 4, but every policeman that was in the police station was killed in Halloween 4 as well. So, yeah, being a policeman in Haddonfield is not a safe profession.
What's her name? Tina? Yeah, like Tina says at some point, she says, they should just cancel Halloween in this town. Yes. It's like, yeah, you're right. I thought that was actually a good line, too.
Yeah.
The good lines, there were a few sprinkled in here. Good lines stuck out to me. You know, Jamie's, Tina's there. And then the one when Loomis is talking to the police chief for the first time, he said, in my heart, I prayed that he would burn in hell, but I knew in my heart that hell would not have him. I was like, that's a pretty good line. That's a classic horror movie kind of ominous thing to say. And, you know, Loomis, I want to say, talking about him, I feel like he actually had a better movie this time around than last time. He had more to do. You know, he was involved in the climax more. I like how he kind of goes rogue and a little crazy when the police are. We're clearly, because he wants to use Jamie's bait to get Michael.
Yes.
Right? And the police is like, we're moving out. And then he locks the door. He's like, we're staying here. And then he grabs Jamie. He's like, come and get her, Michael. Come and get the little girl. And I'm like, man, Lewis has lost it. He is all, but I like that. I like that he was just more involved and had more, I don't, more to do in this one, because I felt like, because you had killed off Rachel from the last film, and she was, as I said in our last podcast, she was like a better Jamie Lee Curtis than Jamie Lee Curtis even was in the first couple movies, I thought. So we lose her. Jamie's just still a little kid. All the other characters are just idiots who get slaughtered by Michael mm-hmm. Myers, and it's rather enjoyable this time around to see him kill all these people. And there's no one left, so Loomis really is the last man standing here, and I liked it. He had a bigger presence. And he, you know, the guy is unhinged, and he would be, right? Because he's been obsessed with this guy for 20 years now.
Right.
Almost. But since he had first become his patient when he was a little kid. So, yeah, I liked Donald Pleasence quite a bit.
Okay, so I didn't, actually, because it was just a bit too much for me for his character. I agree with what you're saying, and I understand what you're saying. But for him to do this and to be using Jamie as this bait, you know, to try and catch Michael Myers, and then at the end he's, like, close up with him and, like, trying to talk to him heart to heart. Like, he wouldn't do that. Like, because he would just be trying to kill Michael Myers. He wouldn't
but
be,
he
like...
Knows, but he knows he can't kill him. Right, he's tried that. He has shot him. He has set him on fire. Like, he has tried everything. Right, so it's like, what's the point at this point? You know, and that's why he shoots him with tranquilizers, I guess, because at least he knows he can incapacitate him and drops the giant chain on him. I get what you're saying.
From?
It is out of character, but I feel like at this point he's done all he can, so he's trying new crazy strategies to see what works at this point.
He's trying new crazy something, that's for sure.
Like, come and get the little girl, Michael. Come and get her.
But the scene where they wheel Jamie in at the beginning because she's having that freak out, and they wheel her into the thing, and he just appears out of nowhere.
He barged into an operating room. He's like, no! Like,
just leave her be. She'll be fine. Just wait.
It's because he's a... Sorry, you might be a psychologist or a psychiatry doctor, sir, but you're not a medical doctor. Could you please leave the operating room? Like, he just barges in there, and they all like, okay, all right, you know. That was odd to me. His first appearance was very odd, very abrupt.
Yeah, I want to point out to you, okay, you especially, because you know how much I love shapes on the X-Files, that, like, I forgive a lot, you know, when it comes to stuff, and, like, I do forgive a lot for my nostalgia. Like if a film holds a certain nostalgia, if a film series holds a certain nostalgia for me, I tend to forgive it a lot, but, like, I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, this movie is not a good movie, and, like, this is definitely, like, I don't remember it being this bad. Like I said, I don't remember much of this movie at all, but watching it. But, yeah, this time around, I'm like, man, this movie is not a good movie.
That's interesting, because I actually liked it more than I expected to.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that, yeah.
I would put it pretty even with Halloween 4, honestly. Mm-hmm. I know people say 4 is the best non-Carpenter sequel, or, you know, 1 and 2 are on this pedestal, and most people say, yeah, 4 is all right, and the rest are garbage. That's the general consensus I feel from most people who follow these movies. I actually, you know, for what it was, I enjoyed 5. I did, because especially... There's a lot of, let's not forget, there's a lot of absurd things that happen in 4 as well. Not to mention, you know, Michael Myers, once you accept the fact that, oh, he's back from being burned alive, I mean, that's a pretty big jump already. So, yeah, the psychic stuff here is really weird and probably the weakest part of it.
Yeah.
But I did like his kills in this one, like the guy with the car.
Okay,
right?
we'll get to those in a second, because we'll kind of do our kills.
Right, I don't
want to
jump the kill count, right? But stuff like that, there were character moments for Michael in here that showed, again, toying with people, and those are my favorite kind of kills, and I enjoyed that. And you know, it was like I said, I liked more Loomis here. I did miss Rachel. I missed how mm-hmm. she'd been killed off, and I think that again, with the psychic stuff is really weak, and killing off a strong character like Rachel so early and so meaningless, you know, she didn't even factor into the main plot.
Yeah,
those are the weakest points for me.
Right. So, okay, so before we go into a kill count here, we do still have to talk a bit about the mask. And I had messaged you earlier that something I didn't want to forget. They, like, sewed some felt or something to cover his eyes, like some black felt, so that you can't see his eyes at all with this mask. And I think that's really odd.
Well, the eye holes are too big, right? So basically he looks like a when you buy a mask. Well, that's the thing, right? It is supposed to be a mask from a Halloween store, so I guess there's some give there. But, like, you buy a mask, and it's supposed to have black eyes, and it has the kind of the thing, like when you see at theme parks characters, right? There's these black screens and they can see out of it, but you can't see in, right? That's kind of the thing. But if this is really supposed to be the same mask, that's a huge continuity break from before. And the eye holes are just too big. That's why they had to do it. If you did it like in the first couple of films where the eye holes are kind of small, you can kind of use light and shadow to hide the eyes. But when you do it like this and there's these giant holes, I mean, you have to do something. And I guess that was their solution.
Mm-hmm. And then there was one other thing that really stood out for me because it was so very different from anything we'd seen in the franchise so far. It was when the two cops came in and the music that was used with these cops.
Boom, 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 boom. Yeah.
Whoa, this was really a bizarre choice because honestly, like what I, as soon as I heard that music, have you ever seen Ernest Goes to Camp?
Oh yeah.
I was thinking about the two cooks, right?
Right.
And how they were like this side lunacy story plot line that was going on. I'm like, this was weird because this is so out of character for the rest of the Halloween franchise to have something that they're literally poking fun at while the movie's going on. Like, this was a really, really odd choice.
Well, yeah, and they were like almost cartoon Looney Tunes sound effects going on. It's like, yes. Well, this is a completely out of place here. And they're even just... Even for incompetent cops, they're really played up for comedy. Like, the way they're just walking around and just, like, come on, guys. Like, that really undercuts any kind of suspense and drama when these are, like, you know, these are the cops. And we don't even get to see the satisfaction of these annoying characters being killed. They're killed off screen.
Right? Yes, like, they are.
But, yeah, that felt very out of place and a very odd creative choice by Hollinsworth on the score there for them.
Yeah. Okay, well, before we get to our ratings on the film, should we talk about the death count?
Oh, yeah, so that's what we're here to do.
Excellent, the good stuff here. So so in this movie, we've got 12 people, we got 8 people by somebody else, which is new, and we've got a dog. We got another dog in this one here.
Michael Myers' mortal enemy, the dog. Right? Yeah, the minute I saw that dog, I was like, this dog is dead. This dog is so dead. It's not going to survive. And, you know, and speaking of the kill count, before we jump into it, it's weird that he collected the victims like that up in the attic. Like, he saved the dog and Rachel and then the car guy all up in the attic for Jamie to find. Ugh.
Okay, so that scene in the attic made me think a lot of Friday the 13th Part 2.
Hmm.
Right, have you seen that one?
I don't recall those. I probably haven't seen all of that one, no.
So, okay, so that's when not Michael Myers, when Jason Voorhees.
Yeah. This is when he's wearing the bag on his head, right?
Yes. And
he's got his mom's head?
Yes.
That's what you're referring to? Okay.
Right, Jason's cabin, and his mom's head's there, and then that girl puts the shirt on and pretends to be the mom and whatnot. I don't know. I was just thinking about that a lot while I was watching this scene as well. But
I mean, and then one. Sorry, and I know we're delaying the kill count here, but one other thing I thought about that scene is like, what is this, like Return of the Jedi or something? Because she's like, I want to see your face, and he takes it off, and they have like this moment, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, Uncle, and then like that triggers him not to kill her.
Uncle Boogeyman.
Uncle Boogeyman. And then he takes the mask off, right? And we can see, clearly, we see his eye, which should be shot out, by the way. We've talked about that before. We see his skin, and he should be, like, they put a little bit of makeup on his hands, right? To have some sort of loose continuity with two. But his face looks fine. You know, I know it's kind of in shadow, but in HD, you can really see a lot of more things than you could back in the day on VHS tapes. And it's like, wow, this is bad continuity. What was that even about? Why did he take off his mask? What is that about? And then he flips back out because she tries to touch him. And then he goes into overdrive trying to kill her. That moment just struck me as like, what is the point of this?
Here, Zach, you have a tear. Let me take care of that for you.
Yeah, the one perfect tear down his perfect eye. But anyway, what I thought. I'm like, this is some lame Return of the Jedi. Father, help me! You know, and I didn't get it. So whatever.
Yeah. Okay, kill count here. So the first one we got the Hermit. Whose knife they call it Hermit on the website again. So my list I got from horror.wiki.com /list of deaths in the Halloween series, which they forgot to put the dog on, believe it or not, on the list. So I'll have to go in and edit that, I guess. So we got the Hermit knifed in the back, Rachel Carruthers scissors in the chest, Michael.
I did like how they did a fake out with Rachel where you thought her and the dog were going to die the first time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, and they just. He came like 10 minutes later. So I like that kind of... Those are the kind of little things that made me like the film. But go on.
Yes, there was some great stuff. I mean, we'll talk about more as we go through it because there is some great stuff, you know. The stuff with the dog was really good and really suspenseful, right? Because the dog is always used as a warning, you know, a warning system, and that didn't really pay off in this, right? And so it paid off in a different way. My favorite death, Michael Garden Claw in the forehead, like that was the best scene, I think.
Oh, and yes, absolutely. I love that because you see this guy, his name is Michael as well, which yes. plays into a kill later, right? But like, he sees this guy, he's watching, he's obsessed with the car, but he knows he can use this car to get where he needs to go to kill people later. So he goes up to this guy in the car, and he scrapes the car. I'm like, oh Michael's man. Screwing with people. I love it, right? Yes. So, and then to the face. Oh, my, in the face. That was my favorite kill of the movie as well, just the whole setup to it as well.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. And then it leads to what I think is another thing that we like to look forward to in this, which is what is that personality scene with Michael Myers, which leads yeah. to him with the mask driving
with
the car.
People he's going to kill. Yeah. Right. Where he's Michael in disguise screwing with his victims. Yeah.
Yes. And she says to herself, like, this is creepy. And it's like, yeah. it is creepy when he's just sitting there with the mask.
But his name is Michael, like the yes. guy she thinks it is. So she's saying, Michael this, Michael that. So and you know it's Michael Myers. Myers there, and he's like gripping the wheel, and that's another great scene in this. As we now, it's kind of the long game with her because he doesn't kill her, and that she right. escapes from that trap. She does die later, but I was thinking, oh, because you know, I didn't really remember the sequence of events right here, and I was like, oh, is this going to go on? And he's going to kill her here, but to see him in that goofy mask, knowing it's him, and then she gets out of the car and he switches the masks, you know, yeah. back to Michael Myers. That was a great scene.
Yes. So a guy named Spitz, impaled through the back with a pitchfork. Samantha Thomas, chest sliced with a scythe.
While they were having sex. And, yes. And let's point out, let's hand it to these teenagers. I guess they're supposed to be teenagers. They all look about 35 to me. Mm-hmm. But practicing safe sex. She's like,
in the 80s.
And then he pulls out a condom. It's like, you know, good. I'm glad, you know, for the children out there watching this, is some good advice for all you horny 35-year-old teenagers out there.
But that scene there as well had a great moment. Like, there's a lot of great moments in this
exactly.
movie.
I feel like there are more great moments in this one than four, honestly.
Yeah, the plot is just no good. But when she's going through the barn following him, who we think is Michael Myers, but turns out to really be Spitz, and right. then she sees him take off in the back, and then the real Michael Myers comes out in front of the camera, but behind her, you know, in the barn. So she's chasing who we think is Michael Myers, but is actually Spitz, and real Michael Myers behind her, who she doesn't, you know, like, it's really, really well done.
I do think they played the whole fake out maybe one too many times, you know, because the cops think it's Michael and it's like really Spitz, and then it's like they do it again and again. It's like, all right, guys, I think you did one too many fake outs.
One too many fake outs for you?
Yeah. One too many for me. So.
Then we have our Deputy Nick Ross and Deputy Tom Farah.
I wanted to see them killed on camera, and we
yes.
didn't see it.
Yeah.
They're so annoying. They deserve to die on camera.
You want to see all of them on camera, right? Which I agree. So, listed as stabbed repeatedly with a pitchfork. Mm-hmm. Tina Williams knifed in the chest. And
Tina, an annoying character, but she did redeem herself by saving Jamie at the end, I thought.
Yes, and then Jamie just kind of sat there and watched while it happened, and then, you know, almost didn't
right. And then,
away.
And then what a lame chase through the woods on a car, by the way. What is he driving like? 5 miles an hour, he cannot run this little girl.
And then they're driving through what looked like a pot field.
Yeah, exactly.
Looked like a marijuana field or something like that. Tina Williams, knifed in the chest. Deputy Eddie Gray, face bashed 9 times against a car steering wheel. Like, that's pretty intense. Deputy Charlie Block, hung with rope noose from the second floor window.
Oh, that was a good kill.
Yes, it was. I know that guy,
I know him from Ace Ventura. He's the guy that, well, he's the guy that gets murdered at the beginning of the film. That's why Roger Predactor is dead. He found Captain Winky. Those of you know who Ace Ventura will know what that's from. But anyway, that's what I recognized him from. But he's one of those character actors who's been in a lot of stuff. But that was a good kill, though. Using the noose, like, that was very creative.
Yep, in the old house. Which that also had a lot of tense in that scene because the cop was trying to escape the room with Jamie, and like the wood was so rotted and old and whatnot that it really like,
couldn't
that
get
added
the grip.
Some tense.
Yeah. And you know, I like they spent a few minutes with that cop before they killed him off.
Yeah.
So like he was like helping. He's like, you know, he was like talking Jamie through this tough stuff, and Loomis had some interaction. So he wasn't just another random cop. You kind of knew him for a few minutes before they killed him. That was made it even more effective.
Mm-hmm. And then off screen, we had Dr. Max Hart and Nurse Patsy West, which were killed by Michael Myers. And then we had shot repeatedly with a machine gun, who they're listing the character's name is Dr. Terrence Wynn, who killed him. So, like, this is the person that I'm guessing is in the black with the boots and whatnot.
Well, I can't. I'm not going to release those spoilers at this time.
Yes. Sheriff Ben Meeker, Deputy Tony, and six other police officers.
So, did the sheriff die in that attack?
The website is listing it, so I guess okay. He did.
Because I tried to keep my eye out when, you know, Jamie walks back in mm-hmm. and sees the aftermath, but I couldn't tell if he was one of the bodies on the ground or not. But and at the end of that, it's interesting, you know, the last film ends with Loomis going, no, no! And this film adds with Jamie going, no! So, yes. Symmetry, right?
Symmetry. Yeah. Yeah, just George, this psych is written by George Lucas himself.
It's like poetry, it rhymes.
So Michael's count so far is 44 people, 4 dogs, and then 2 shrapnel deaths and 8 people by somebody else.
Oh. But do we want to add the possum that he ate at his house?
Possums don't care. I don't care about okay. possums.
Possums don't. They're not domesticated animals. They don't count. Gotcha.
Right. And then the series total, 60 people, 14 robots, 4 dogs, 2 shrapnel, and 1 assumed death. So that's our robots. That's our running total. 14 robots. Can't forget those in Halloween 3. Mm-hmm. So that's our running total so far for the Halloween franchise. And, you know, so, Zach, any final thoughts? You want to have any final thoughts on this film? You want to give it your rating?
Yeah, I'm going to give this one 2 out of 5 jack-o'-lanterns. I really did think it's pretty on par with 4. I think, as you said, the story itself, the plot, very questionable. But the moments, there's so many great moments here, and I feel like there were more really classic horror moments in this one than there were in 4. So I did enjoy it in that respect, you know. And they keep adding more and more supernatural elements in, which I disagree with. I feel like Michael Myers was most effective when he was just the boogeyman, but like not a real boogeyman, just like a guy that you're scared of that can pop out of the shadows. Because you're starting to lose all sense of drama and all sense of suspense, because nothing can kill this guy. So, you know, how can you root for someone to overcome him when he's just mowing people down no matter what? So that's a problem. Also, I don't know what the original plan here was. I know Donald Pleasance was getting older, but it seemed to me that if you just watch the movie, that Loomis dies there at the end, right? Because after he's beating up Michael we drop the chain on him, beating him with some wood, then he collapses on top of him and his eyes kind of open up and glaze over a little bit. But they left it just vague enough for if they wanted to bring him back, they could. And, well, spoilers, he comes back for 6. So, but yeah, no, if you just watch in isolation, he's not in the scene after that. It looks like I would have assumed Loomis died.
I would assume he died in Halloween 2.
Very good. Yeah, very good. Very good. What about you, Brandon? Any final thoughts on this?
There's some great stuff. Like, I really, really, we haven't really touched on it yet, but the laundry chute scene is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it was really tense. I thought it was great. There's a lot of really interesting stuff, a lot of interesting takes in this film, a lot of interesting suspenseful moments. There's a couple of really good fake-outs in it, which, you know, to watch a series like this, it brings a fresh new take to it. I just think that the story is really weak, and I don't like this weird psychic connection that she has with him. And I don't like how they don't address this tattoo and this thing. Like, they have a clear shot on it that this is a tattoo thing, and they just don't even address it. And fine, they address it in another movie, and I know that they do. But if this was the worst producing movie, they may not have had another sequel, you know, and they may not have ever addressed that. And I think that would have left it all the worse to have not addressed that at all and just had this random person help him escape from the prison at the end.
Well, yeah, I mean, this one came out in 1989, okay? And the next one didn't come out until 1995.
Like, that's kind of, so for a long time,
you've got
nothing. To
leave people being like, what is this all about? I mean, like, for a while, I'm sure they probably thought, well, I don't know, are we going to get these questions answered?
So. Yeah. So, I can't remember exactly what I gave 4, because I don't have Letterboxd on my iPad right now, but I think I gave it a 2.5. But again, like, even with as weak as I think it is, you know, with the great stuff that it is, this is not like a 1-star movie or anything like that. There's still some good stuff in it, and I would agree with your rating of 2 pumpkins out of 5. I think that's a fair rating.
Brandon, there's a difference.
Oh, jack-o'-lanterns. You know what? The storyline doesn't even make me want to carve this thing up. I'm just going to put a pumpkin on my patio.
There it is. Look at that. Bringing it back.
Two pumpkins, not even two jack-o'-lanterns. There you go. So, excellent. Right on. Well, that's all we've got for you this week. Next week, we've got returning guest John Mills, and we're going to be talking about Halloween 6, or actually, Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers. But we're doing something special in that we're actually going to be talking about both cuts of the film, the theatrical cut and the producer's cut, which I've never seen. So I'm really looking forward to checking that out because I've heard tell of this producer's cut of the film. And so I've heard that it's better than the theatrical cut. So I'm really interested to see how different it is and what we have in store for us for this film. So John Mills is going to be joining us for that. He actually is specifically requested to be on that one, and then we roped him in for the other two that we did with him for Halloween 2 and 3. So excellent. Zach, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Holding On to Smallville, where we talk about each and every episode of That Young Superman Show. You can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. I'm also a host on Trek FM, the Star Trek podcasting network. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. I host Standard Orbit, where we talk about all things old and new, Captain Kirk and the Enterprise, the original series podcast.
Excellent. My name is Brandon Metella. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella, and you can find me on Trek FM as well with a show called Warp 5, which is all about Star Trek Enterprise, and Melodic Treks, which is all about Star Trek music. And you can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network talking about Alfred Hitchcock with my friends Chris and Tom on our show Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Well, that's all we got for you this week. I'd like to extend a gracious thank you to Marcelo Pico of the Talk Film Society for letting us loose on the airwaves and having a little bit of fun with this little project that we have. And I'm so glad that we're doing this because I needed a reason to watch the Halloween movies again before the new one came out. And Zach, I haven't told you this since the last time, but I'm planning on inviting some buddies over and we're going to watch the 1978 Halloween and then go to the theater to see the 2018 one right afterwards.
Am I not invited?
If you want to come up to Saskatchewan and watch with us, you're more than welcome. So I'm not coming down to Texas. So if you want to come to Saskatchewan, it's a pretty hot place today. It would feel just like home.
So, I know, right?
We had 100 Fahrenheit in the shade today. So yeah, it was a
Fahrenheit.
Hot day today.
Ooh, Fahrenheit. Yes. 100 Celsius, you'd be in big trouble though.
I would. I'd be dead.
So. That's a great idea. You know, the back-to-back kind of thing. I like trying to do those in movie series. The way movie series have been going lately, it's not like you can sit down and watch all the Marvel movies before you go to the theater these days. So it's good that they have a clean cut from 78 to 2018 now, so you can just watch that one before the next one. That's a great idea.
Excellent. Right on. Well, again, thank you for listening. And until next week with The Curse of Michael Myers, this is Brandon Metella signing off.
Romeo, 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 Romeo.
There you have it.
I don't think we've had much here. So in Canada for like masks of our prime ministers or something like that. I don't think so. So I could ask Marcy. She's here. Marcy, do we have like, did people ever use like masks of Canadian prime ministers for anything? Like Nixon masks or Reagan masks or anything like that. She doesn't think so. We can cut that part of the podcast. But anyways, as I talk to my wife in the other room there, so...